Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be taking a look at this article by Prince Ricardo de Lacerda about some, potential changes to the Constitution in the wake of the 2024 election.
Yeah, it really gets into some weighty issues about presidential power in Trump's second term.
Okay, so let's unpack this a little bit. The author points to two major areas of concern: the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE.
Yeah.
And the potential for Trump to seek a third term. So
yeah.
DOGE first. That's a name that sounds like it's straight out of a meme, right?
That does, yeah.
But according to this article, some people are taking it pretty seriously, even though it doesn't even officially exist.
Right, and the article points out a pretty crucial detail. Congress is supposed to be the one creating federal agencies, not the president.
Mm.
The Constitution doesn't even mention agencies except for the Treasury.
Wow.
So this whole DOGE thing raises some serious questions about where the executive branch's power ends and Congress's begins.
And to make things even weirder, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are supposedly the ones heading up DOGE.
Yeah.
And neither of them were elected to any government position.
Exactly. Yeah. The article really drives home the point that this setup bypasses the traditional checks and balances on government power.
Hmm.
It's sort of like when Jared Kushner was leading the COVID-19 task force.
Yeah.
But imagine that on a much larger scale.
It's kind of mind-blowing that this is even being considered. I mean, what does this mean for transparency and accountability in government if unelected individuals are running these major agencies? Are we just stepping into totally uncharted territory here?
Yeah, it's definitely a departure from the norm.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is that, according to de Lacerda, there seems to be very little pushback against the idea.
Mm.
It's almost like everyone is just accepting this as the new normal.
That's a little unsettling.
Yeah.
If something this significant is happening without much debate, does that set a dangerous precedent for the future? It makes you wonder if these checks and balances that we think are so strong are really as strong as we think they are.
That's a really good question. I mean, the Constitution is supposed to be the bedrock of our system.
Yeah.
But if it can be reinterpreted or even ignored, what does that mean for the rule of law?
Okay, so let's shift gears for a second and talk about the second potential bombshell that de Lacerda brings up, Trump going for a third term.
Right.
Now, the 22nd Amendment clearly limits presidents to two terms, right?
Right, and the author really emphasizes the clarity of the amendment.
Yeah.
It literally states, no person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice.
Mm.
Seems pretty straightforward.
It does.
Yeah.
But the article mentions there's talk about reinterpreting the amendment to allow for a third term.
Mm-hmm.
How is that even possible with such clear language?
Well, some people are arguing that the amendment only prevents someone from being elected more than twice.
Hmm.
Not necessarily from serving more than two terms.
Okay.
It's a pretty creative interpretation.
It sounds like a pretty flimsy argument to me. If we start bending the Constitution to fit specific agendas, where does it end? It feels like opening a Pandora's box.
Exactly. The Constitution is supposed to be a set of fundamental principles that can't be easily manipulated.
Yeah.
Once you start reinterpreting it for convenience, you undermine the very foundation of our legal system.
And de Lacerda seems to suggest that both of these issues, the DOGE and the potential third term, are directly tied to Trump and his supporters' willingness to kind of challenge the status quo.
Yeah.
He uses the phrase blow it all up
mm.
to describe this mentality.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty strong statement. What are your thoughts on that?
It is. Yeah. It's a provocative statement. The article doesn't delve too deeply into the motivations behind this blow it all up mentality, but it does suggest that there's a growing sense of disillusionment with the current system among some segments of the population.
So it's possible that people are so frustrated with the way things are that they're willing to consider these really drastic changes, even if it means disregarding longstanding legal and political norms.
That's one interpretation, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's important to consider the potential consequences of such a radical shift.
Yeah.
De Lacerda seems to suggest that embracing these changes could lead us to a point of no return, a point where the very fabric of American democracy is, you know, irrevocably altered.
That's a pretty sobering thought. What exactly does he see as the potential consequences?
Well, in the article, he highlights concerns about the erosion of constitutional safeguards, the potential for abuse of power, and the weakening of democratic institutions.
It sounds like we're talking about some pretty fundamental changes to how our government functions.
We are. And that's why it's so important to understand the nuances of these issues and to engage in these open and honest conversations about the potential implications.
I completely agree. This whole conversation makes me think back to something you mentioned earlier, the Supreme Court's role in all of this.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's crucial to bring the Supreme Court into the picture. The article touches on how the court has been reshaping the core authority of the presidency, especially when it comes to immunity for presidents who might commit crimes using their executive powers.
That's a pretty big deal. So is he saying that the court is essentially giving presidents more leeway to act without fear of legal repercussions?
He's definitely raising that concern.
Yeah.
He argues that the Supreme Court, particularly in recent decisions, has broadened the scope of presidential immunity, making it much harder to hold presidents accountable for their actions.
It feels like even though the court is supposed to be a check on presidential power, some of their recent decisions have actually had the opposite effect.
That's a valid point. And this shift in the court's approach is something we need to be paying very close attention to. It has profound implications for the future of our democracy and our ability to hold our leaders accountable for their actions, even the most powerful one.
This is all pretty complex, and it sounds like there are no easy answers.
Right.
But I'm curious, what does De La Serta suggest we can do about this? Are there any solutions to this imbalance of power that he proposes?
Well, he doesn't offer any simple solutions. It's a multifaceted issue with deep roots in our system of government.
Yeah.
But he does advocate for a few things.
Okay, what are those?
First, he stresses the importance of congressional oversight of the executive branch. He argues that Congress needs to step up and reassert its own authority.
Okay.
Especially when it comes to checking the president's power.
So basically, Congress needs to flex its constitutional muscles a bit more.
Exactly.
Not be afraid to push back against executive overreach.
Exactly.
Okay. And anything else?
Yeah. He also talks about the need for reforms to the judicial system, particularly in the way Supreme Court justices are appointed. He suggests that the current system, which is heavily influenced by partisan politics, is contributing to the imbalance we're seeing.
So ensuring that the court is more balanced and less likely to favor one particular ideology over another.
Right. De La Serta believes that a more ideologically diverse court would be better equipped to serve as a neutral check on presidential power, regardless of which party holds the presidency.
Those seem like reasonable suggestions.
Yeah.
But are they enough to truly address this issue? Is there anything else that needs to be done?
Well, he also stresses the importance of something we've been talking about throughout this entire deep dive.
Yeah.
Open and honest conversations about the role of the presidency in the 21st century.
He seems to be suggesting that it's not just about legal and structural changes, but also about shifting the culture and the way we think about presidential power.
Absolutely. He argues that we need a national dialogue about the balance of power, about transparency and accountability, about the limits of executive authority in a modern democracy. He believes that this conversation needs to happen at all levels of society, from classrooms to newsrooms to the halls of Congress.
It sounds like he's calling for a fundamental rethinking of how we view the presidency and its place in our system of government.
He is.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important point. It's not enough to just tinker with the rules or appoint different judges.
Right.
We need a deeper understanding of the challenges we're facing and a collective commitment to finding solutions that preserve the integrity of our democracy.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. The history of presidential power, the Supreme Court's role, and some potential paths forward. But where do we go from here? What are the potential consequences if these trends continue?
That's the question we'll be exploring in the final part of our deep dive.
Well, we'll have to save that conversation for part two of our deep dive.
Sounds good to me.
All right, we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, so we're back, and we're about to dive into the historical context of this whole presidential power issue.
Right.
De La Serta really emphasizes how different the presidency is today.
Yeah.
One what the founding fathers envisioned.
You know, and I think you're right. It's easy to forget that the founding fathers were deeply skeptical of centralized power.
Right.
Especially after just breaking away from a monarchy.
Yeah.
They wanted to ensure no single person held too much power.
Absolutely. So how did we go from a presidency that was designed to be limited in scope to the powerhouse that it is today? What happened?
Well, it's been a gradual evolution,
yeah.
driven by a lot of different factors, yeah. historical events, changes in society, even the personalities of certain presidents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about times of national crisis.
Yeah.
Those often lead to an expansion of presidential power.
Yeah.
Take Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. He took actions to preserve the Union that significantly expanded executive authority. Things that would have been unthinkable just a few years before.
So crisis creates a kind of vacuum that a president can step in and fill.
Exactly.
And that sometimes reshapes the boundaries of their power. Right?
Exactly. And the thing is,
yeah.
even if those expansions of power are justifiable in those extraordinary circumstances,
right.
it often sets precedents that are difficult to reverse.
Yeah.
Once the crisis is over.
Mm.
It's like the presidency gains new muscles that it never quite loses.
It's like a ratchet effect.
Yeah.
Presidential power expands in times of need, but it rarely shrinks back to its original size.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
And this pattern has repeated itself throughout American history. The Great Depression, World War II, the Cold War. Each of those periods witnessed significant expansions of presidential power
yeah.
that really have shaped the office into what we know it as today.
So it's not just about individual presidents deliberately seeking more power for themselves.
Right.
It's about how the office itself is adapting and changing along with the world around it.
Right. And as the world has become more complex and interconnected mm-hmm. with issues spanning borders and demanding swift action,
yeah.
the demands on the presidency have grown exponentially.
Right.
The president is increasingly seen as the one who can respond quickly and decisively to these global challenges.
Which brings us back to Trump.
Right.
If the presidency has been on this trajectory of expanding power.
Yeah.
Does that make the potential consequences of his norm-breaking actions mm-hmm. even more significant?
That's a key question the article raises.
Yeah.
De La Cerda argues that Trump's willingness to test the limits of presidential power, mm-hmm. combined with this existing trend toward a more powerful presidency, creates a situation that's potentially very volatile.
It's like a perfect storm brewing.
Yeah.
A president who's not afraid to challenge conventions operating within a system that's already been moving towards a more centralized executive branch.
Yeah, and that's why I think understanding the historical context mm-hmm. is so important. It helps us grasp the gravity of the situation we're facing.
Yeah.
And the potential long-term consequences of these developments. It's not just about Trump, it's about the office itself.
Right.
And how its power has been steadily growing for over two centuries.
Okay, so we've talked about this historical evolution of presidential power.
Right.
But there's another crucial player in this story that we touched on earlier. The Supreme Court.
Yeah.
How has the court's interpretation of the Constitution impacted the balance of power between the branches of government?
That's where things get even more interesting.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court plays a critical role in defining the boundaries of presidential power.
Hmm.
Their decisions can either reinforce those boundaries or expand them.
Right.
Depending on how they interpret the Constitution.
So they're like the referees, in a way.
In a sense, yes.
Yeah.
The court's rulings on cases involving presidential power set precedents that shape future actions and how the Constitution is understood.
Remember how we were talking about De La Cerda's point about the court reshaping the core authority of the presidency?
Right.
Especially when it comes to immunity for presidents who might commit crimes using their executive powers.
Right. That was a pretty unsettling part of the article.
Yeah.
It sounded like he was saying the court is making it harder to hold presidents accountable.
Yeah.
For their actions, even if those actions are illegal.
It feels like even though the court is supposed to be a check on presidential power,
right.
some of their recent decisions have actually had the opposite effect.
That's a valid point.
Yeah.
And this shift in the court's approach is something we need to be paying very close attention to.
Right.
It has profound implications for the future of our democracy and our ability to hold our leaders accountable for their actions, even the most powerful one.
This is all pretty complex, and it sounds like there are no easy answers.
Right.
But I'm curious, what does De La Cerda suggest we can do about this?
Right.
Are there any solutions to this imbalance of power that he proposes?
Well, he doesn't offer any simple solutions.
Right.
It's a multifaceted issue with deep roots in our system of government. But he does advocate for a few things.
Okay, what are those?
First, he stresses the importance of congressional oversight of the executive branch.
Mm.
He argues that Congress needs to step up and reassert its own authority, especially when it comes to checking the president's power.
So basically, Congress needs to flex its constitutional muscles a bit more.
Exactly.
And not be afraid to push back against executive overreach.
Exactly. He also talks about the need for reforms to the judicial system, particularly in the way Supreme Court justices are appointed. Mm. He suggests that the current system, which is heavily influenced by partisan politics, is contributing to the imbalance we're seeing.
So ensuring that the court is more balanced and less likely to favor one particular ideology over another.
Right. De Lacerda believes that a more ideologically diverse court would be better equipped to serve as a neutral check on presidential power, regardless of which party holds the presidency.
Those seem like reasonable suggestions, but are they enough to truly address this issue? Is there anything else that needs to be done?
Well, he also stresses the importance of something we've been talking about throughout this entire deep dive. Open and honest conversations about the role of the presidency in the 21st century.
He seems to be suggesting that it's not just about legal and structural changes, but also about shifting the culture and the way we think about presidential power.
Absolutely. He argues that we need a national dialogue about the balance of power, about transparency and accountability, about the limits of executive authority in a modern democracy.
Yeah.
He believes that this conversation needs to happen at all levels of society, from classrooms to newsrooms to the halls of Congress.
It sounds like he's calling for a fundamental rethinking of how we view the presidency and its place in our system of government.
He is, and I think that's a really important point.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to just tinker with the rules or appoint different judges.
Right.
We need a deeper understanding of the challenges we're facing and a collective commitment to finding solutions that preserve the integrity of our democracy.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. The history of presidential power, the Supreme Court's role, and some potential paths forward.
Mm-hmm.
But where do we go from here? What are the potential consequences if these trends continue?
That's the question we'll be exploring in the final part of our deep dive.
Okay. Sounds like things are about to get even more intense. All right. So we're back, and it's time to kind of confront the big question here.
Yeah.
What happens if these trends that we've been discussing, you know, actually continue? What does it mean for the future of American democracy if the presidency keeps accumulating more and more power and the checks and balances keep weakening?
Yeah, it is a little unnerving to think about.
Yeah.
We've talked about the historical trajectory of the presidency.
Mm.
You know, how certain events and even Supreme Court decisions have really expanded that executive power over time.
And De Lacerda's article really emphasizes how Trump's presidency, even with all of its controversy, might have accelerated those trends in a way that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Right. He was willing to kind of push those boundaries further than many presidents before him.
Yeah, he was definitely a norm breaker.
So let's talk about the potential consequences of an unchecked presidency.
Yeah.
What could actually happen if these trends continue?
Well, one of the biggest risks, and De Lacerda highlights this in the article, is the erosion of democratic norms and institutions.
Hmm.
The very things that are supposed to safeguard our system, things like the peaceful transfer of power, respect for the rule of law, free and independent press, those could all start to crumble if a president's able to act with too much impunity.
And we're already seeing some signs of that happening, aren't we? With, you know,
absolutely,
the increasing polarization of our politics, the spread of misinformation, the attacks on the media and the electoral process. These are all warning signs that our democratic system is under some real strain.
I agree.
It's almost like we're becoming desensitized to these things, you know?
Yeah.
It's like we're just accepting this as the new normal.
Yeah.
But if we just keep going down this path, what does the end game even look like?
Well, De Lacerda suggests that the worst case scenario is a slide towards a more authoritarian form of government, where power becomes concentrated in the hands of the executive branch and individual rights and liberties are gradually eroded.
So it sounds like we're talking about a potential future where the United States starts to resemble some of the countries that we see around the world, where democracy is weak or non-existent.
That's the concern. A lot of people who study democracy and political systems, they warn that these trends, if they're left unchecked, can lead to a point where the very foundations of a democratic society are, you know, irreparably damaged.
It's a pretty chilling thought. So what can we even do about it? Is there any way to reverse these trends and restore the balance of power that's so crucial to a functioning democracy?
Well, De Lacerda doesn't offer any sort of magic bullet solution. I don't think anyone really does. It's a complex problem that really requires a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah.
But he does emphasize a few key things in the article.
Okay, what are those?
Well, first, he talks about the need for a renewed commitment to democratic principles and institutions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about reminding ourselves why these things matter.
Yeah.
Why they're worth fighting for.
And that starts with education, yeah. Right? Making sure that people understand how our government works, how these different branches are supposed to balance each other out, and why those checks and balances are so essential to preventing abuse of power.
Absolutely. And it also means being informed and engaged citizens, staying aware of what's happening in our government, and being willing to speak out against injustice or overreach of power, you know, no matter who's in office.
It's not just about voting every few years.
Right.
It's about being active participants in our democracy on an ongoing basis.
Right. Contacting our elected officials, holding them accountable for their decisions, supporting organizations that are working to protect our democratic values.
He seems to be suggesting that we can't just rely on the system to fix itself.
Mm.
We have to be the ones who are actively safeguarding it.
Mm. Exactly. And it's not going to be easy. It takes effort, it takes vigilance, and it takes a willingness to stand up for what we believe in,
yeah,
even when it's difficult.
And it also requires a sense of unity, doesn't it? Because he talks about the dangers of division and polarization, how those things can be exploited by those who are seeking to undermine democracy.
That's right. We need to find ways to, you know, bridge those divides and come together as a society around a shared commitment to those democratic principles.
It's about remembering that we're all in this together.
Yeah.
And that the future of our democracy depends on our collective willingness to defend it.
I agree.
He makes a really powerful point at the end of the article.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth quoting directly. He says, "The American experiment, like all experiments, is ongoing. It requires constant tending, constant vigilance, and a willingness to adapt to changing circumstances. The future is not predetermined. It is shaped by the choices we make today."
That's a great quote.
It really does capture the essence of what we've been discussing throughout this entire deep dive, right?
It does.
We're at a really critical juncture in American history, and the decisions that we make in the coming years will have a profound impact on the future of our democracy.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So as we wrap up this exploration of presidential power and the potential threats to our system of government, what's the one key takeaway you hope our listeners will remember?
I think the most important message is that democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires active participation, it requires informed engagement, and it requires a willingness to defend the principles that make it work.
It's about understanding that the future of our democracy is not something that's just handed down to us.
Right.
It's something that we create together, you know, through our choices and our actions.
Well said.
And I think that's a perfect note to end on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a fascinating conversation.
It really has. And remember, the future's in our hands.